Jambo.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not a show, a documentary, or anything that you can get through digital medium is worth watching. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us on www.freedomtrainradio.com or on Stitcher, iTunes, or Google Play Music. Be sure to head to those places, whichever one you prefer. Give us a review. And be sure to head to PacSync.org. That's www.PacSync.org to show some love and support for our sponsors. PacSync is a black activist and advocacy organization focused on developing the black community through a shift in culture, education, and economics. As always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference and perspective that is aligned with that of the black community. So the things we look at will be looked at with the racial component involved and with some lessons that can be used to improve the community. In 2016, the report, The Ever-Growing Gap Without Change, African American and Latino Families Won't Match White Wealth for Centuries, detailed the fact that it would take black families 228 years to reach the level of wealth of white families today. In 2017, the same organizations that produced that report combined their powers for another report that is even scarier. This report details that unless we make drastic changes, we will find ourselves living in a nation where minorities own less than 1% of this nation's wealth. This is made especially egregious considering the fact that by 2043, most of the population is expected to be non-white. This will effectively and potentially permanently place America in a position of economic segregation. This week, we detail the road to zero wealth. Now, this report, I'm just going to go over this report the same way I would a documentary. I'm not going to go through this thing line by line or section by section like I did the BIE report. It's longer, but it is still something that's very significant. So without further ado, this report starts by stating that middle class income does not guarantee middle class security. And it goes into detail by saying the white middle class, which they make $38,000 to $61,000, own 8 times as much wealth. They own $86,000 in wealth as the black middle class, which owns $11,000 in wealth, and 10 times as much wealth as the Latino earners, which own $8,600 in wealth. It goes on to state that if the middle class was defined by wealth instead of income, black families and Latino families would need to earn 2 or 3 times more to be in the middle class. Only blacks and Latinos in the highest income quintile, that means the blacks and Latinos that make more money than 80% of the rest of the blacks and Latinos, will qualify for the middle class status or higher, and only those with advanced degrees. Meanwhile, every white family with a high school diploma would qualify for the middle class. It estimates that by 2024, the median black and Latino households are projected to own 60 to 80% less wealth than they did in 1983. This is expected to have white households owning 99 times more wealth than black households. The median black household is projected to have a wealth percentage of zero by 2053, unless something is done. It goes on to state that when subtracting for durable goods like automobiles, electronics, furniture, and the median wealth for black families is $1,700. Latino families, $2,000. Then it goes into single-parent white households who own more wealth than two-parent black households. White high school dropouts own more wealth than college-educated blacks. And it goes on to state that all the gains made by black people in wealth accumulation were wiped out by the Great Recession. The report goes on to state that it goes into historical policies that have caused such differences in wealth accumulation going back to the founding of this nation, starting with chattel slavery and wage theft. Goes into the Homestead Act of 1862, which offered free land to certain individuals. However, many blacks were unable to claim this land due to them not having legal standing or other issues caused by them being black. 20% of the U.S. population can potentially trace their family's history of wealth building to the Homestead Act, which makes that act very interesting. The denial of Social Security to farm workers and domestic workers, which was built into the Social Security Act of 1935, that was impactful because two-thirds of those affected were black. Redlining, which is a policy I'm sure we're all familiar with at this point, a policy of denying services directly or indirectly to residents within a particular area. And even the denial of economic opportunities for service members of color with the failure to properly oversee the administration of the 1944 GI Bill. They also went on to detail the welfare trap that many people face. And for those who don't know, the welfare trap is basically the way the system is set up. You go into welfare to receive aid, help with surviving. And basically, there is no in between. You either qualify or you don't. And anything that you do to try to get yourself out of that situation immediately disqualifies you from large sections of benefits. So if you have a savings account, or you have a vehicle, or you have various other things that you could potentially use to pay your debts or anything of that nature, they disqualify you and bar you from welfare programs, which is a trap because now that you're in the program, you become dependent on the program to survive. And when you start trying to take steps to get out of the program, they start slashing the benefits that the program pays out, which kind of disincentivizes wealth saving or wealth accumulation tactics. It detailed the role of the criminal justice system. It dove deeply into the tax code. And the report also went into solutions, which include government policies, tax code changes, as well as various other government bodies such as the Consumer Finance Protection Agency, which protects consumers from predatory practices in the financial sector. So it really was a well-rounded report. It was about 36 pages, but it was a report that kind of dove into a bunch of different areas to paint this picture that I feel is very important to be painted. So the fact that this report looks at wealth instead of income is important because while the income gap is shrinking, the wealth gap is growing. And with so many reports looking at the income gap showing that America is getting better, it is important to look at the wealth gap because it shows that situations aren't really improving economically with this increase in income that black people are experiencing. And as a people, we really aren't talking about wealth the way we need to. Our conversations on economics and finance, for the most part, center around income, making more money, making more money, making more money, and not really on wealth accumulation, which, you know, really has not a lot to do with your income on certain levels. So we also have to define what wealth is before we dig deep into this, because that is something that is imperative to all economic talks. And so for that, we have to say that wealth is what is left after all debts are cleared. So basically, if you have $1,000 in assets and $500 in debt, then you have $500 in wealth accumulation. Now, there are numerous reasons that come into play for why income is going one way and wealth is going another, which kind of seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? Until you really understand what wealth is and what income is. But the fact remains that income is going one way, wealth is going the other way. And the reasons for that are everything from financial literacy to investment opportunities, as well as just standard opportunities, period, in general. Social and class barriers, shopping, insurance rates, loan rates, medical bills and issues, the level of medical care given. I mean, we could break this down and make a case for all of those things and more as to how they're affecting wealth accumulation within the community. And all of those things are valid, along with the ever-present situation that affects all people, which is the more wealth you have, the less money you actually have to spend, because the more it seems like people are willing to just give you things just based off wanting to be in your good graces, maybe using your status to help them in other means, such as increasing their marketing ability, their brand visibility, and various other things. This is just, the whole system seems backed up backwards, where the wealthy have all these opportunities to acquire more wealth and save money, even in terms of their finances and home purchases and things of that nature. They get lower interest rates. Their houses are cheaper per square footage. The insurance rates on homes in their areas are cheaper. They have better supermarkets. I mean, we could go into all of that, as I said earlier, and all of those would be valid reasons. And home ownership is especially significant when we talk about wealth. And even though I have a more balanced view when it comes to home ownership versus renting, I think a lot of that has to do with your lifestyles, also in who you're renting from and various other situations that come into play here. One can't deny the fact that home ownership has a special role to play in America when it comes to wealth accumulation, because for a good chunk of people, the entirety of their wealth is in their homes. So if you don't own a home, where does that leave you? Now, that also points to the fact that we have to state that if you are upside down in your home, if you're still making payments, technically you don't own your home. And so technically you don't have that wealth. We also have to look at modern and historical redlining and how that's prevented Black people from owning homes, even to this modern day. And I say modern because it wasn't too long ago, maybe a few years ago, that Wells Fargo had numerous issues concerning redlining and things of that nature. And just last year, in 2016, Wells Fargo had various issues concerning discriminatory policies towards Black people in America. And this was in 2016 that they had these issues. So we still have modern issues here, and those play a role. We keep talking income over and over and over again in the community, disposable income, this type of income, that type of income. But that tends to exaggerate the importance of income to long-term wealth accumulation. Okay? And in most cases, we aren't talking wealth accumulation at all. Not in a general sense of acquiring things that lead to long-term wealth accumulation. And long-term wealth accumulation, an important component of that is paying off your debts, is not accumulating more debts. If you accumulate vast income, but you also accumulate vast debt, you are not accumulating wealth. And that's the mindset we have, though, is looking at income as a measure of success instead of looking purely at wealth as a measure of success. Wealth accumulating assets, wealth accumulating devices are devices that grow in value over time, devices that you can pass on to your children, devices that you could pass on to other entities, and devices that can be used in a pinch to live and survive off of. So devices that can be liquidated, but that they don't necessarily have to be easily liquidable, easily placed in a cash state. Even though we have all these reports talking about how income is going this way, wealth generation, wealth is going the wrong direction, and wealth is how we're going to change our economic situation, not income. Wealth, not income. So we move on. into some of the takeaways and some of the leeways of this report. The report does give some policy issues that can help, but every time they change policies, they seem to make things worse for us. So I personally don't really have faith in the political structure as it's laid out right now, especially with our inability to efficiently and productively participate in that structure. But let's go over some of these things, since there is a new tax overhaul on the horizon for us, something that is probably going to become policy. One of the things that this thing advocates for is the strengthening of the Consumer Finance Protection Agency, and that we can say that agency has been weakened. He's put someone in charge. Donald Trump, the Trump administration, has put someone over that administration that doesn't believe in the mission, that is very pro-finance sector, and that has weakened the agency. And he's taken a lot of the teeth out of the agency and its ability to punish financial entities for predatory practices. So already we're moving in the wrong direction in that regard. They say lower the estate tax threshold, but currently in the current tax plan, there are talks of eliminating the estate tax altogether. And then there are talks of doubling the estate tax to $11 million for singles and $22 million for couples. Neither one of those solutions are what this report says is necessary. They say create a net worth tax on fortunes, which is something that Donald Trump himself said should happen back in 1999. 20 years later, he's president, and it doesn't appear to be a part of his tax plan or his tax policy. They say fix loopholes that will allow wealthy people to hide wealth from taxation. His plan doesn't do that. Neither one of the plans I've seen, none of the plans I've seen do that. And all of the plans lower the tax burden on the taxes that they do process through from wealthy individuals. So that's not happening. So it's pretty clear, it's pretty solid, that the prediction of this report of zero wealth by 2053, and they're counting on there being no changes to exacerbate the problem. These new tax plans and proposals that are coming out that I'm sure are going to become law, they're going to exacerbate the problem. I'm more than positive that one of these plans is going to be signed into law in late December. I'm almost positive. And we're going to have an exacerbated problem that is going to potentially bring the zero wealth prediction of this report into reality much sooner than 2050. So it's a dangerous and it's a bleak situation. We're talking about 25% of blacks that live below the poverty line, which is 24% for $24,000 for a family of four. We're talking about 57% of blacks that live in a state of liquid asset poverty, which is basically having less than $6,150 in cash savings for a family of four. We're talking about 90% of blacks going into debt to fund their college, some of which don't finish, and most of which will probably get jobs that they are overqualified for. And what you're talking about, a tune of $24,000 a year on average to pay for college, you're looking at a steep penalty. We're talking about 41% of blacks who are homeowners, and those that are in homes are in homes that are overpriced because of the high price of the loans, the high interest rates, and many of whom will default because of debt or other factors. And then you're talking about 58% of blacks who spend 30% or more of their income on rent and utilities. And the lower the income of these people, the higher the percentage. Broke people aren't splurging, contrary to popular opinion. They're spending most of their money to survive on average. And then we have to get into this whole concept of middle class, because I feel like we get caught up in labels as always. The middle class is always being defined by income, but it could also be defined by education. So, and it could also be defined by various other metrics. So in this, if we define the middle class by wealth, it becomes interesting because it shows the disparity. First off, when we're talking about these labels of middle class, upper class, lower class, blah, 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 we need to understand that if you make $70,000 in the black community, you're in the black upper class. It's roughly $70,000 puts you in the black upper class. $66,000 puts you in the top 25%. But if you're going by the 20 percentile or the quintiles, as they like to go by, then $70,000 puts you in that area. Okay? Which is equivalent to the white middle class. Our top 1% starts at roughly $150,000 in income. And those numbers don't compare to the national average. And we know that we have a legacy of barriers to contend with, which is why I typically don't advocate for general comparisons between the races. And I largely think that we should look at our situation and say, is this bad? Yes, it's horrible, even by itself. And these wealth numbers, these income numbers are horrible, even by themselves. But if you want to look at them to hurt your soul even more in comparison to other people, then look at it this way. For every one nickel we have in wealth. No, let me scratch that. We have one nickel for every dollar that a white family has in wealth. 5 cents for every dollar that they have. Education is not the answer because the disparity still exists regardless of educational attainment. A white person with some college has more wealth than blacks with advanced and professional degrees. Working harder is also not the answer, and higher incomes aren't the answer. We know higher incomes aren't the answer because incomes are going up while wealth generation for blacks is going down and wealth generations for whites is continuing to rise. So we know income isn't the answer. We know that black people are hard workers. Not all black people are lazy, and I hate that stereotype. I hate that stigma. But those were broken down in another report, Umbrellas Don't Make It Rain, in 2015. We don't have the opportunities that other people have to acquire wealth-building assets. And that is largely because we don't have the wealth necessary to put us in those spaces or to even consider acquiring them. And that's something that we have to look at and we have to think about really, really hard. And this is important because this affects our ability to absorb problems. It affects our access to opportunities. It affects our ability to create change within our communities. It affects our abilities to employ our communities, to provide for our communities. And for those of you that are a supporter of punishing other communities and forcing other communities to make a change, which I'm not in agreement of, I think boycotting should be reserved for black businesses that aren't doing what we need them to do. We punish them with a boycott. And then when they come in line, we go back. We reestablish our consumership with that entity. But even if you are white businesses, you just walk away from. You just don't go back to. But even if you are a supporter of punishing and forcing other communities to make changes happen within that community, if you don't have wealth in your community, you don't have the ability to do that. Unless you have the ability to affect the wealth of another community, you don't have the real ability to affect change in that community. Look at what's going on with the NFL. With all the sports, really. We're chanting, give Cap a job, give Cap a job, give Cap a job, but we have no power. No economic power. We're chanting, support you, stop supporting white supremacy, but we have no economic power, so we're largely ignored. Meanwhile, the white people are screaming, shut them niggas up. And now all of the activities that sports are taking is to shut them niggas up because they have the power to affect the wealth of all of those people involved in the decision-making processes of sports, especially the NFL, especially the NFL. So those are all things that we have to consider. And that is why wealth accumulation is so important. And why it's more important than income, and why we have to begin to take the fact that we are not accumulating wealth a lot more seriously. And we got to do things different. We got to do things a lot differently. We got to think about things differently. The solutions that we've been given don't work because the people that are giving them rarely, if ever, come from our paradigm and think like we think. They don't understand the culture and how it's been implemented. They don't understand the historical ramifications, the historical legacies, and how those shape our culture narrative and who we are as a person nowadays. The solutions that they give us are based on their world, their paradigm, their perspective, things that have worked for their community. And that's where the rugged individualism comes from is reinforced in a lot of respects, because white people own 95% of the wealth of this nation. The economics and the structures and the culture of their community is set up in such a way that they are going to support community growth, communal development, communal wealth accumulation just by virtue of participating, because they own so much of the landscape. So they can afford to be ruggedly individualistic and still support community growth and development. We can't do that because we don't own the necessary structures to do that. So we have to think about things a little bit more differently. This means that instead of focusing on individual growth and development, we focus more on communal growth and development. I understand that they're related, but they're not the same. If you uplift your group that you are a part of, you naturally get uplifted as well. This is where we begin to talk about black cooperative initiatives, where a group of people come together, they buy a wealth accumulating device that makes them wealthy as a group, and then they can take that and convert it into individual wealth. It is a lot easier to do that and absorb the random things that life is going to throw at you, the random debts, bills, issues that life is going to throw at you as a group, than it is to try to deal with those situations as an individual and still try to accumulate wealth, because most of our wealth is wiped out by random occurrences. The group dynamic protects the individual. And look at how many individuals we have that are wealthy now that have done little to nothing for the collective. That's also something to think about. These cute catchphrases we like to come up with all of the time for all these things, we need to dig deeper into them. Support black businesses is three words that seem to be extremely misunderstood. Support black is two words that is even more misunderstood. It's not enough to support black businesses. Those businesses have to support black businesses as well, and those businesses have to support the community. Understand? We have to create situations where we control the entire process of creation for something. And the income and the wealth that's created by creating that process needs to be directed into bettering the community, back into the community, the people in that community. Supporting nonprofits and creating nonprofits and organizations that fulfill a mission, if there isn't one that does it already, or there isn't one that does it adequately already, and you can't get them to do it adequately. So we have to think about investments differently. Maybe instead of investing in stocks and bonds, you deal directly with a black business. Black businesses have to be open to being to out-of-the-box thinking, accountability, and community development. The black educational system needs to be reworked so that black educational establishments churn out people that the black businesses need to take their business to another level. And those people need to have the skills drilled into them, not only to survive in the business world, but also they need to have a culture of community improvement drilled into them as well as part of their education. And that can be done through homeschool initiatives. It doesn't have to be done on the college level, although it should be. It could be done in private schools. You take over the school board and do it in public schools where you can. I mean, the solutions for this thing is endless, but we have to stop looking at income. We have to stop thinking about things from the perspective of people that don't exist in the world we live in. Notice all these reports don't detail individuals. They detail groups, because the understanding is there that if the group fails, the individual fails with it. And the only reason they're really doing these reports is because they understand that as minorities become a larger portion of American society and begin to be the majority force in American society, the fact that all the wealth would be concentrated in the hands of the new minority white people means that the wealth of America as a whole will begin to be dragged down. And that is exactly what's happening. Now, we need to take that and apply it to our communities and stop looking at the individuals. We got into this paradigm where people don't want to see wealthy people having to pay the equal amount equivalent to their wealth because they have this dream of becoming wealthy themselves. I'm not disparaging that dream, but you need to understand that in order for that dream to happen, the people that are in the position that you want to be in have to pay their fair share. That opens up the opportunity for you to join them. And I don't care what nobody says. If I got $1 million and you take $250,000, I still got $750,000. I'm still good. If I have $20,000 and you take $5,000, I'm not good no more. $15,000 is not a lot of money. And that's how we got to look at it. So that's where we are. This report is a must-view report. We all need to look at it. We all need to study it. It's going to be up on the website in the Freedom Train area. Please check it out. Drop me a line. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know some things that you got out of the report. I didn't mention everything in the report because I like to keep these shows brief. But this is deep, man. And we really need to be serious about how we go into not just economics, but about culture, because culture is a huge component of all of this as well. So I will see you guys next week. Definitely check it out. And definitely pay attention.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review. So you only spend time on the docs that you need to.